Punjabi Hari. Jaya Radha Madhava, Punjabi Hari. Gopi Jana Vallabha, Girivara Dhari. Jaya Gopi Jana Vallabha, Girivara Dhari. Yashoda Nandana, Vraja Jana Ranjana. Yashoda Nandana, Vraja Jana Ranjana. Yamuna Tira Vanachari. Yamuna Tira Vanachari. Jaya Radha Madhava, Kunjabi Hari. Jaya Radha Madhava, Kunjabi Hari. Jaya Prabhupada, 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 Srila Prabhupada. Nitya Gaura Hari Bo, Hari Bo, Hari Bo, Nitya Gaura Hari Bo. Gaura Premanandi. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Narayana Namaskritya. Naram Chaiva Narottamam. Devim Sarasvatim Vyasam. Tato Jayamudirayat. Nashta Prayeshu Apadreshu. Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya. Bhagavati Uttama Shloke. Bhaktir Bhavati Naishtaki. So welcome everyone to this morning's Srimad Bhagavatam class. It's my honor and pleasure to be here with all of you. Today we're reciting, we'll be speaking on Canto 2, Chapter 9, Text 29. So please repeat. Bhagavat-chikshitam aham. Karavani yatandritaha. Nehamana prajasargam. Bhadyeyam yadanugrahat. Bhagavat-chikshitam aham. Karavani yatandritaha. Nehamana prajasargam. Badhyeyam yad anugrahat. Devotees.
Bhagavat
word-for-word translation, Bhagavat, by the personality of Godhead, Shikshitam, taught, Aham, myself, Karavani, by acting, he, certainly, Atandritaha, instrumental, Na, never, Ihamanaha, although acting, Prajasargam, generation of the living entities, Badyeyam, be conditioned, Yat, as a matter of fact, Anugrahat, by the mercy of. So, translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Please tell me, so that I may be taught in the matter by the instruction of the personality of Godhead, and may thus act instrumentally to generate living entities without being conditioned by such activities. Purport. Brahmaji does not want to become a speculator dependent on the strength of his personal knowledge and conditioned to material bondage. Everyone should know in clear consciousness that one is, in the execution of all activities, an instrument. A conditioned soul is instrumental in the hands of the external energy, guna mayi maya, or the illusory energy of the Lord. And in the liberated stage, the living entity is instrumental to the will of the personality of Godhead directly. To be instrumental to the direct will of the Lord is the natural constitutional position of the living entity, whereas to be an instrument in the hands of the illusory energy of the Lord is material bondage for the living entity. In that conditioned state, the living entity speculates on the absolute truth and his different activities. But in the unconditioned stage, the living entity directly receives knowledge from the Lord, and such a liberated soul acts flawlessly without any speculative habit. The Bhagavad Gita 10, 10-11 confirms emphatically that the pure devotees who are constantly engaged in the loving transcendental service of the Lord are directly advised by the Lord, so much so that the devotee unwaveringly makes progress on the path home back to Godhead. Pure devotees of the Lord are therefore not proud of their definite progress, whereas the non-devotee speculator is in the darkness of illusory energy and is very much proud of his misleading knowledge based on speculation without any definite path. Lord Brahma wanted to be saved from the pitfall of pride, although he was posted in the most exalted position within the universe. Om Ajnanatimirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurum Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manovishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Gurum Vaishnavam Cha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatam Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvetam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakam Vitams Cha He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dinabandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostite Tapta Kanchana Gorangi Radhe Vrindavanishvari Rishabhanu Suti Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vanchakalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanibhyo Vaishnavibhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Jai. So this verse is spoken by Lord Brahma to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And the reason that this verse is here is because in the previous chapter, chapter 8, Parikshit Maharaj was asking so many questions. And so now in chapter 9, Shukadeva Goswami is answering those questions. But he's not just answering them according to his own thoughts, even though, you know, obviously he's a liberated soul and he has the knowledge, but he's referring back, he's referring up to the disciplic succession. And so he's thinking, he's remembering something that he heard about a previous conversation between Lord Brahma and the Lord, in which Brahma asked very similar questions to that of what Parikshit Maharaj asked him. So just for example, if we look at a previous verse, text 26, Lord Brahma is saying, in spite of that, my Lord, I'm praying to you to kindly fulfill my desire. May I please be informed how, in spite of your transcendental form, you assume the mundane form, although you have no such form at all. And then from chapter 8, this is 288, Parikshit Maharaj had asked, if the Supreme Personality of Godhead, from whose abdomen the lotus stem sprouted, is possessed of a gigantic body according to his own caliber and measurement, then what is the specific difference between the body of the Lord and those of the common living entities? So it's the same, they're both asking basically the same question, like to explain the nature of the Lord's form. And he has, we know he has a transcendental form, but also he appears to take on a regular material form when he comes to this world. So please, what is the difference between the Lord's form and the bodies of ordinary living entities? So just that's one example. You could go through and do a study and see how almost all the questions that are asked by Brahma in this section were this similar to the ones asked by Parikshit in the previous chapter. So it's kind of like, you know, if someone asks, say a new devotee asks a question, and then instead of just giving the answer, you might say, actually, interesting that you asked that question, because one of Prabhupada's disciples asked a similar question to Prabhupada, and this is how Prabhupada answered it. So it's like it's adding authority to your own, to your answer. So Shukadeva is doing that. And it, I thought it was interesting that whenever we look in the scriptures and see great souls asking questions to other great souls, there are often parallels between the content or the subject matter of the question being asked. An example of that is when the sages of Naimisharanya ask the six famous questions, right? The sages to Suta Goswami. So one of those questions in 1.1 verse 9 is Pumsam ekantata shreyas. What is the ultimate good for all people? And so in answering that question, Sutta refers to a similar question asked by Parikshit to Shukadeva Goswami, in which he says, what is the way of perfection for all people, especially those who are about to die? And then it's interesting that Arjuna asks a very similar question to Krishna in Bhagavad Gita 2.7, where he says, Yat shreyas chanishitam bruhitan me. I'm asking you to tell me for certain what is best for me. So the shreyas, they want to know what is the shreyas, what is the ultimate good for me, for you, for all people, for all time to come. So when great souls ask questions, they ask great questions. And they ask similar questions because great minds think alike. And we can learn from them how to ask questions. And that's why these questions like this are repeated throughout the scriptures, because these are the questions. These are the questions that are going to save us and save everyone, because the answers are related to Krishna. And that's so sometimes we say that questions are like the question mark is like a hook. So questions are like hooks. They hook onto something and they draw it out. Or you could also say that questions are like the way of opening a tap. So this material world is a place of ignorance, and we're all born into ignorance. But we have this thirst for knowledge, because the nature of the soul is satchit ananda, that our nature is to have knowledge. So we have this innate thirst for knowledge, and so we ask so many questions. But we have to know how to ask the right questions, you know? Like there's one verse in the beginning of the second chapter of the first canto, where Prabhupada says that this whole world is just full of questions and answers. The birds in their nests are asking questions and asking questions and getting answers. The lawyers in the courts are asking questions and getting answers. Students in schools and colleges are asking questions and getting answers. But despite all these questions and answers, nobody's satisfied. And it's in that verse 1-5 that then, I think it's Shukadev, is it Shukadev or Sutta? He's congratulating. I think it's Sutta Goswami. He's congratulating the sages that your questions are worthy. Because why? Because yat krita krishna sam prashno yenatma suprasediti. Because prashna means question. So your questions are, they're not just prashna, they're sam prashna, they're complete, they're perfect questions. Why? Because they're related to Krishna. Krishna sam prashno. And because of that, then yenatma suprasediti. They're satisfying to the self. These are the questions that are going to satisfy your thirst. So, yeah, like I was saying, the questions are, it's like turning on a tap and then the water comes out. So you ask the question and then someone's going to speak, then the whatever's flowing from their mouth, the words that come in response to your question, that's like the water coming out of the tap. So what we're thirsting for is nectar. We're thirsting for the nectar for which we are always anxious, Lord Chaitanya says in Shikshastakam, the nectar of Krishna Katha. But if we ask the wrong questions, it's like opening the wrong tap. And then you might get salt water instead of pure water. Or you might even get some contaminated water that's going to make you sick, right? If you open the wrong tap, especially in India, some taps that you don't want to drink that water. So we have to make sure we're opening the right tap, which means we have to make sure we're asking the right questions. And then what we're going to get in response is something that's going to be very nourishing, that's going to be very satisfying, that's going to quench our thirst for knowledge. And so how is this related to this verse about being an instrument, acting as an instrument to Krishna? So the very questioning, in asking these questions that that Parikshit's asking and that Brahma's asking, that in itself is already, he's already being an instrument in Krishna's service just by asking the right questions. Because speech is very powerful. And that's why Rupa Goswami, in the very beginning of Nectar of Instruction, the first two words of the Nectar of Instruction are Vacho Vegam. He's talking about the need to control the urge to speak. And Krishna also addresses this in the Bhagavad Gita, where he talks about austerity of speech, that we should speak words which are pleasing and beneficial and truthful, not agitating to others. And regularly reciting Vedic literature or speaking words that can be backed up by Shastra. And in that way, by speaking such words and by asking questions which evoke such words from others, then we're acting as Krishna's instruments. Whereas on the other hand, if we ask questions that are like, you know, trying to get the latest juicy gossip, or in relation to somebody's fall down or criticism or something, then that's like opening that tap that's going to give us the contaminated water that's just going to contaminate our minds and make us spiritually sick. And those who speak such criticisms or, you know, unnecessary criticisms or just lies or prajalpa or speak harshly, words that hurt, words that discourage, then we're being instruments of the material energy. We're being instruments of Maya. So that's one thing to be very careful of. We don't want to be instruments of Maya. We want to be instruments of Krishna in everything that we say and in everything that we do. And Krishna wants this. He says in Bhagavad Gita, yat karosi yat ashnashi yat jihosi dadasi yat yat tapasyasi konteya tat kurusva mad arpanam. Whatever you do, whatever you eat, whatever you offer, whatever you give away, so that also includes whatever you say and whatever you do, do that as an offering to me. In other words, do that as an instrument in my service. And then he directly tells Arjuna in the 11th chapter, 11:33, nimittam matram. Nimitra matram bhava savyasachin. He says, O Arjuna, just become my instrument. So Krishna wants us to be his instruments. And Even though Krishna is the supreme controller, he's still calling upon us to make his plans come to fruition. And he showed that to Arjuna in 11th chapter Bhagavad Gita. He showed him how the battle of Kurukshetra was already won. The Kauravas were already smashed, you know, in the jaws of time. But still he needed Arjuna to fight. So in the same way, this whole world is moving according to Krishna's plan. And Krishna's plan is to get all the conditioned souls back to Godhead. That's what this whole material existence is for. It's a big project with the purpose of getting everyone, including ourselves and everyone else, back to Godhead. And of course, Krishna could do that, but he doesn't do that because his plan is to engage hundreds and thousands of other people in doing that. And that, of course, includes all of us. So here, so how to do that? Brahma is setting the example here, is that we need to pray for empowerment. So he's praying that may I thus act instrumentally to generate the living entities. Because Brahma has a huge task before him. You know, he has to design the whole world. He has to create all the different types of bodies for the 8,400,000 species of life. And that's a huge task. And it's something that, you know, he doesn't have prior experience to doing. Every time Brahma starts, it's like a new start for a new Brahma doing this thing. Or maybe, I guess, at least every time there's like a complete annihilation, then it's a Brahma dies, another Brahma comes. But yeah, so it's a difficult task. And he's praying for empowerment from the Lord to be able to do that, to act as the Lord's instrument. And he's also praying for protection. He says here, without being conditioned by such activities. So Brahma's realizing that he's foreseeing that if I do such a great task, then there's a chance that I might become bewildered into thinking that I actually did something, into thinking that I did it, you know, that I'm the doer, and becoming proud with that misconception, misunderstanding of the situation. So I want to read to you a little bit from Canto 3, Chapter 9, which gives a little more detail about Brahma and his prayers for creative energy. That's what the title of the chapter is, Brahma's Prayers for Creative Energy. And that's what he's doing in this verse. This is what this verse is all about. So this is a little expansion on that. I won't read all of it, but what I'm going to read is Brahma's final request for empowerment, and then I'm going to read the Lord's response to his prayers. So I'm beginning from 3.9.23. Brahma says, the Supreme Lord, the personality of Godhead, is always the benefactor of the surrendered souls. His activities are always enacted through his internal potency, Rama, or the goddess of fortune. So now here comes his prayer. I pray only to engage in his service in the creation of the material world, and I pray that I not be materially affected by my works, for thus I may be able to give up the false prestige of being the creator. So you see, this is almost exactly the same thing as the verse that we're studying today, that I pray to engage in the service and the creation of the material world. He's saying, may I thus act instrumentally to generate the living entities? And then, I pray that I not be materially affected by my works, for thus I may be able to give up the false prestige of being the creator. And here he's saying, without being conditioned by such activities. So this is the repeated request of Brahma. And so the Lord's response to this starts in text 27. He actually speaks in text 29, but this is a little prelude to it, the Lord's speech. The Lord saw that Brahma was very anxious about the planning and construction of the different planetary systems and was depressed upon seeing the devastating water. He could understand the intention of Brahma, and thus he spoke in deep thoughtful words, removing all the illusion that had arisen. So I just thought it was interesting because Brahma is such a powerful living being. He's the first created being. He's there with the Lord. And still he's feeling depressed. He's feeling depressed because he's looking out over the waters of devastation and he's seeing that there's nothing here. There's absolutely nothing to work with. I'm all alone. I've been charged with such a monumental service, and I feel totally incompetent, incapable to do it. So he's just feeling like despondent, that how can I possibly do this? And so the Lord replies in, so now the Lord is going to speak starting from text 29. The Supreme Personality of God had said, O Brahma, O depth of Vedic wisdom, be neither depressed nor anxious about the execution of creation. What you are begging from me has already been granted before. So the first thing the Lord does is to encourage him. Don't be depressed. In fact, he's glorifying him. O depth of Vedic wisdom. You're thinking that you can't do it, but you actually have all the knowledge. You have such deep Vedic wisdom. And in the Vedic wisdom, there's the knowledge to do everything. So you know what you need to do, and you know how to do it. And what you're asking for has already been granted before. Like, this has happened many times. You're just going to do it again. It's not you're looking out over and seeing that nothing is here, and you're the first person, and this is the first time this ever. No, this has happened many times in the past. And you can do it. And don't be anxious. And then he says, O Brahma, situate yourself in penance and meditation and follow the principles of knowledge to receive my favor. By these actions, you will be able to understand everything from within your heart. So this is what, in the purport to text 29 here, Prabhupada is referring to Bhagavad Gita 10:11, where Krishna says, Tesham chatati yuktanam bhajatam pratipurvakam dadami buddhi yogam tam yenamam upayanti te. That to those who are constantly devoted to serving me with love, I give them the intelligence by which they can come to me. I give them the understanding. And then he says, to show them special mercy, I, dwelling within their hearts, destroy with the shining lamp of knowledge the darkness born of ignorance. So we're thinking, you know, anyone who's thinking that you can't do it because of your ignorance or because of your inability or whatever, don't worry, I'm in your heart. Just surrender to me. I'm going to destroy that. I'll destroy your ignorance and I'll replace it with knowledge. Everything that you need to know to do everything that you need to do in my service will be there at exactly the time when you need it. So that's what Krishna is saying here. And he continues, O Brahma, when you are absorbed in devotional service in the course of your creative activities, you will see me in you and throughout the universe, and you will see that you yourself, the universe, and the living entities are all in me. You will see me in all living entities, as well as all over the universe, just as fire is situated in wood. Only in that state of transcendental vision you will be able to be free from all kinds of illusion. So he's assuring him that you won't lose your Krishna consciousness, that you're going to do this work, I'm going to empower you to do this work, I'm going to give you the knowledge to do this work, and you're going to always remember me. You'll see me in everything. You'll see that everything is my energies, and therefore you won't fall into illusion. He says, when you are free from the conception of gross and subtle bodies, and when your senses are free from all influences of the modes of material nature, you will realize you are pure form in my association. At that time, you will be situated in pure consciousness. So not only will you be able to do it, and not only will you be able to remember me while you do it, but by doing it, you will realize your true self. By doing that service for me, you'll realize your pure form in my association. Because you will be in my association the whole time that you're serving me, because that's what it means to serve Krishna. It means to be with Krishna. It means to live with Krishna. It means to feel Krishna's hand in your life, to feel Krishna's empowerment in everything that you do. And then by that, Krishna's so pleased. And then he reveals himself to us, and we understand our relationship with Krishna. He continues, since you have desired to increase the population innumerably and expand your varieties of service, you shall never be deprived in this matter, because my causeless mercy upon you will always increase for all time. So for one who puts themselves in this position, Krishna's causeless mercy will be there, always, and it will increase. It will only increase for all time. It will be increasingly increasing for all, and it'll never stop increasing. You are the original Rishi, and because your mind is always fixed on me, even though you will be engaged in generating various progeny, the vicious mode of passion will never encroach upon you. So sometimes in service we do something which may appear to be like passionate activity. We need to build temples and fundraising and all these kinds of things. It seems like motive passion, that activities are typically influenced by the motive passion. But because the devotee's mind is always fixed on Krishna, the motive passion never actually encroaches on the devotee who is thus engaged. He says, although I am not easily knowable by the conditioned soul, you have known me today because you know that my personality is not constituted of anything material, and specifically not of the five gross and three subtle elements. When you were contemplating whether there was a source to the stem of the lotus of your birth, and you even entered into that stem, you could not trace out anything. But at that time, I manifested my form from within. O Brahma, the prayers that you have chanted, praising the glories of my transcendental activities, the penances you have undertaken to understand me, and your firm faith in me, all these are to be considered my causeless mercy. I am very much pleased by your description of me in terms of my transcendental qualities, which appear mundane to mundaners. I grant you all benedictions in your desire to glorify all the planets by your activities. And then finally, any human being who prays like Brahma and who thus worships me shall very soon be blessed with the fulfillment of all his desires, for I am the Lord of all benediction. So I really like this. The Lord continues, but I'll stop here because I feel like this is such a beautiful, inspiring conclusion to this section of the Lord's response, because he's appreciating Brahma's prayers. He's encouraging and reassuring Brahma that everything is going to be good. And then he's saying that any human being, I appreciate your prayers so much, Brahma. Anyone who prays like you and who worships me like you've worshiped me shall very soon be blessed with the fulfillment of all their desires, because I am the Lord of all benediction. So this reminded me that of Srila Prabhupada, because Srila Prabhupada also prayed like Lord Brahma. And if we just, before we get into Srila Prabhupada's prayers, we can break down the prayers of Brahma into a process for praying. Or especially the process for praying for empowerment when we're about to undertake some very difficult or immense task. So first of all, we should just surrender to Krishna. The first thing is just surrender. That Krishna, I'm yours, and please accept me and use me as your instrument. So that's the first thing, that I'm not doing this on my own. Like, I'm not doing this. This is not my career thing, you know. This is not, it's not about me. It's about you, Krishna, and I'm just your instrument in this. I'm serving you according to your desire, and because I'm yours. And it Prabhupada says in the purport that this is our natural constitutional position, to be instrumental to the will of the personality of Godhead. Directly. So, to surrender. And then the second thing, after surrendering to Krishna and asking him, you know, please accept me, please use me, then there's the prayer for empowerment. And to pray for empowerment requires two things. So the first thing is humility. Because we have to be humble enough to recognize that I can't do it on my own. By myself, I'm so limited. You know, I'm just Manda Sumanda Mateo. You know, I'm Kali Yuga specimen, lazy, misguided, short life, always disturbed, quarrelsome, unlucky. Yeah, all the symptoms that Bhagavatam says, that's what I am. What am I going to do? I can't do much. I can barely get my own life together. What to speak of, help anybody else or do anything transcendental in the service of Lord Chaitanya. So, you know, I need the help. I need the help. I am powerless to do it on my own. So that, and then the next thing that's required to pray for empowerment is faith. Because, okay, acknowledging that I'm powerless to do it on my own, but we need to have faith that Krishna has the power. Krishna can do anything. The Supreme Lord is omnipotent. He's omniscient. He's all-powerful. And not only that, but he's so gracious, he's so generous and magnanimous and compassionate, and he's ready, so much so that he's ready to give that empower to me. He has the power and he can bestow it on me, and he wants to bestow it on me, and so he will bestow it on me. So we have to have that confidence, faith in Krishna's position and confidence in Krishna's mercy, and fixed in and sure certainty that Krishna will empower me. And then we can pray. So then we ask the Lord for his empowerment with full faith that he will give it and that he's capable of giving it. And then the third thing is to pray for protection. Because if we're going to attempt some monumental task and if we're going to be empowered by Krishna, then for sure we're going to be successful. That's what the Lord says, that such person will very soon be blessed with the fulfillment of all their desires, for I am the Lord of benediction. And Krishna loves benedicting his devotees. He just loves, that's what he does for fun, you know, blessing the devotees. He wants to do that. That's like his loving exchange. That's how he exchanges love with his devotees, especially in this world. And so when we do get success in our endeavors in Krishna's service, then there's this chance that we'll become proud, or that, you know, we'll think, wow, I'm so great, and, you know, no one has done such a great thing as I've done. And we might, you know, think less of other devotees and, you know, offend other devotees, or be overly zealous in our endeavors and, you know, step on the toes of other devotees, or just become completely delusional. You know, sometimes we see that leaders in ISKCON have done great things and risen to great heights, but then just become completely delusional about who they are and what their position is. And so just as Brahma prays like that, anyone who wants the empowerment of the Lord should also pray for protection, because these things can very quickly lead to fall down. So then what I wanted to compare to, what really struck me when I read Brahma's prayers for empowerment, was how Srila Prabhupada prayed in a very similar way in the prayer that he composed on the Jaladuta when he first arrived the shores of Boston, the Markanay Bhagavad Dharma. So that song is all about Prabhupada's anticipation of preaching the message of Krishna in the Western world. That's what it means. Markanay means the West, and Bhagavad Dharma means the teachings of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, Bhagavad Dharma. So he goes through the same formula of praying to the Lord, starting with surrender. So the first thing, surrender. Srila Prabhupada, I'm not going to read the whole prayer, but I just sort of pulled out different quotes that show these different steps. So Prabhupada says, now you can do with me whatever you like. He has this, that I'm yours, I'm ready to be your instrument. Now you can do, I'm yours, you can do whatever you want, you can do with me. So he's putting himself in that position, that I am just your instrument. I have no separate desire to do anything here, I've just come here in your service, and I'm your servant. And then he begins to pray for empowerment, and he also, he literally goes through this acknowledgement of his own humility and expressing his faith in the Lord. So, but first he assesses the task at hand, and he feels that it's an impossible situation, right? Very much like Brahma when he's depressed, looking on the waters of devastation, feeling depressed, like, what am I going to do? What can I possibly do here? So Srila Prabhupada, he saw how people in the Western world were so deeply covered by the modes of passion and ignorance. So he talks about that in his prayer. And he even says, why have you brought me to such a terrible place? What am I possibly going to do here? This is just, I have no idea how I'm going to be able, how to do this. And then, so just looking at the impossibility of the task. And then, recognizing his own humility, his own, what he sees as a incapability of doing it. And he says that, how will I make them understand your message? He says, I am unfortunate, unqualified, the most fallen. And then he says, I am powerless to convince them. So he literally asserts his humility in his prayers. And then, he expresses his faith that Krishna is all-powerful, that Krishna can do anything. And so he prays for the empowerment to be able to, for empowerment so that Krishna can use him to fulfill his purpose. He says, I am seeking your benediction so I can convince them. My Lord, it is up to you to make me a success or failure. Only by your causeless mercy will my words become pure. And then finally he says, I am just a puppet in your hands. So if you have brought me here to dance, then make me dance, make me dance, make me dance, O Lord, as you like. And then the third step, praying for protection. Prabhupada doesn't specifically pray for protection in the Markinay Bhagavad Dharma, but we know that Prabhupada did pray for protection often, because there's one story when he's in Los Angeles Temple and he's standing in front of the deities with folded hands for a long time. And then one of the disciples afterwards, when Prabhupada turns around, asks him, Prabhupada, I'm curious, what were you praying for there? And then Prabhupada said, I was praying to the Lord to protect me from Maya, because Maya is very strong. So he said, I'm always praying to be protected from Maya. So just to conclude, that this is a really good formula for all of us to pray like this, to first of all surrender, Krishna, I'm yours, to acknowledge that, you know, well, first of all, to, after surrendering to Krishna and Krishna, I'm yours, I'm your servant, what service would you like me to do? And then take guidance from, you know, peers and seniors and our gurus. What can I do? You know, whatever my stage of life, whatever my situation, whatever my skill set is, what thing can I do? Let me do something wonderful. Right? Like Prabhupada said, what is the use of being Americans if you don't do something wonderful? So each of us should think, what wonderful thing can I do in the service of Srila Prabhupada's mission? And then, you know, do something amazing. Do something that you think you can't do. Do something that just puts you down on your knees and forces you to pray like this. That I am totally incapable of doing this, but I would like to do this. And then have faith that Krishna can do anything. One time when I was a new devotee and I was just learning how to distribute books, and I was thinking, you know, I tried a few times and it was really difficult. And then Rivindaswarupa Prabhu was visiting London Temple at the time, and I said, I really want to distribute books, but it's so hard, I don't know if I can do it. And then he says, yeah, you might not be able to do it. And I was like, okay, and I was immediately thinking maybe I should do another service. And then he said, but, and then he paused, and that got my attention, stopped my mind from going to another service already. He said, do you think that Krishna can do it? And I was like, obviously, Krishna can do anything. And he's like, so do you think that Krishna could do it through you? And I was like, I guess so. I mean, if Krishna can do anything, he can do anything through anyone, so he could do that, even that through me. He's like, there you go. That means you can do it. Because Krishna can do it through you. So like that, whatever it is that we are wanting to do and thinking that we can't do, have faith that Krishna can do it through us, and he wants to do it through us. Krishna wants this movement to be a success. And there's so much to do. You know, we're still in the early days of this. There's supposed to be a golden age of Krishna consciousness. This is supposed to be the main, you know, movement. This is supposed to be the main, the practice for the age, the Yuga Dharma. And we need to establish that. And we're just in our infancy here, just 50 plus years, and there's 10,000 more years to go. So there's just so much to do. And Krishna needs us to do it, and he wants us to do it, and he's ready to empower us to do it. And he will remove all the obstacles. He will just kick all impediments out of our way. He'll remove whatever anarthas we have in our hearts that are blocking us or making it difficult for us to proceed. He'll clear them all out. And he'll provide all the opportunities and the support and the knowledge and the resources, because he's God. He has everything at his disposal. And we just need to be willing. You know, sometimes they say we just need to get out of the way. We're the only ones that are blocking our own success in spiritual life, is ourselves. So we just need to be willing. And why not? Why would we not be willing? Like Prabhupada says, this is the natural constitutional position of every living entity. to be an instrument in the direct will of the Lord. So since that's who we are constitutionally, why would we want to be anything else? Why would we want to do anything else? So I'll just end there with that question for your consideration. And are there any other questions or comments from yourselves? Yes, Madhumat.
Thank you very much, Prabhupada, for such a nice class. You mentioned there that Lord Brahma was, I forget actually, it was Lord Brahma or Krishna saying about not being influenced by mode of passion.
Mm.
Could you explain how it actually works? Because, for example, creation is mode of passion, or Arjun was fighting, and you have to be in the mode of passion.
Yeah.
But Krishna is saying you won't be influenced by mode of passion.
Yeah.
Could you explain what that means?
Sure. Thank you. Sometimes we have a misunderstanding of what it means to be passionate. You know, sometimes like if a devotee is just very active, you know, they're just flying from one service to the next and doing a lot of things all the time, in high energy when they deal with you, like have this kind of mood like that, we'll say they're very passionate. But that's not the mode of passion. Because if somebody's engaged in service and they just want to serve, you know, and they're not thinking of themselves and they're just trying to please Krishna and please devotees and do as much as they can to please Krishna and please the devotees, that's not the mode of passion. If we look at the qualities of the mode of passion according to Shastra, it's all about material motivations. It's like it's like lust, you know, desire for material gain. You want to get respect or fame or, you know, profit. You want to earn money or you want to get a position. Those are all the characteristics of the mode of passion. But somebody who's just very energetic in the service of Krishna, that's not the mode of passion. That's just Krishna conscious enthusiasm, right? That's just like being fired up. Yeah, utsaha in Krishna's service. So that's actually favorable. So we have to be very clear on that. So generally, creativity comes from the mode of passion, but when creativity is used in the service of Krishna, then it's transcendental. Then it's just Krishna conscious enthusiasm. Because the mode of passion, anything done in the mode of passion, it results in distress, right? It's like nectar in the beginning, but poison in the end. And it degrades one. Whereas activities in the mode of goodness, they're like poison in the beginning, but nectar in the end, and they elevate one. They bring about self-realization. So if we're doing something in Krishna consciousness, as long as we're not selfishly motivated, we're not doing it for some, you know, name and fame, profit, adoration, and distinction, then it's not the mode of passion, even though it might look like it. So yeah, we have to have a deep understanding of activities in Krishna consciousness, because, you know, like just basically like two people are cooking. One's, you know, and they may be even cooking the same meal using the same recipe, but for one, it's through sense gratification and they're going to be verily eating only sin. And the other one is service to Krishna and they're going to be purifying themselves, accepting Krishna's mercy and making spiritual advancement. So the activities can look very similar, but totally different. Okay. Yes.
I also really appreciated your class and the parallels you drew with Lord Brahma's prayers and Srila Prabhupada's prayers and how we can also pray like that. But I was thinking that, you know, often, you know, thinking of doing big things like, you know, building a temple or, you know, book distribution,
mm-hmm.
in the past, that, you know, those kinds of things have been the main focus and always are the main focus, but also just in our daily lives of, you know, wanting to be a good parent,
mm-hmm.
or a good wife or a good husband, you know, a good teacher, all of those things helps to build our community, which when we bring people back, we want to be able to have a healthy community that they can join.
Yeah, great point. Yeah, and those are big things. Those are wonderful, monumental things.
But often we don't think about them.
Right, yeah. I mean, to raise a child in Krishna consciousness and actually have them come out Krishna conscious, that's like a huge thing. You know, it's like you're taking a soul back to Godhead, you know? Or to have a community where, you know, the loving exchanges between devotees are going on, where everyone feels welcome and included. That's a wonderful thing. That's so attractive. You know, that's what everybody wants. Everybody wants to be part of a community like that. And where are such communities? You know, so if we can create a community like that, then the whole world is going to come, because that's what everyone's looking for. The only reason they're not here is because they don't know about it, you know? So then we need to go out and tell them about it. We have this wonderful community where people actually, like, love and care about each other and are selfless and cooperate. And yeah, so we need to create those things. Yeah, those things in themselves change the world. Yes, Mother Agamya.
Yes, but that prayer of Srila Prabhupada is an excellent prayer to pray before one steps out on sankirtan,
mm-hmm.
the distribution.
How, or does anything, basically.
Yes. Yeah. Also, is this on? Okay. Enthusiasm. I was just reading devotees saying, even if you're not enthusiastic, just fake the enthusiasm, and others around you will pick up on it. So by faking enthusiasm, you're doing a service to the other devotees,
uh-huh.
because they will. That might ignite their enthusiasm.
Yeah, and then when you see them so enthusiastic, you'll become enthusiastic too.
Yeah.
It's like you know, sometimes there's kirtan going on and you're just in a really, you know, maybe you didn't sleep well that night, or you're not feeling well, or you just got some bad news, or, you know, you just got in a fight with your spouse or something. Like, you're not feeling like dancing, but you just get out there, you're just like, whatever, I'm going to dance for Krishna. And you just start dancing. Then, you know, other people see you, they'll start dancing. And then, you know, because you're dancing and you just sort of overcame the inertia factor, then, and because you kind of did it to please Krishna, then all of a sudden you feel like dancing. And then before you know it, you're just ecstatic. And you forgot about everything. You forgot that you even had an argument. You're feeling great. Your physical pains went away like that. And everybody else, and it was contagious. Now the whole temple room's dancing. You had an ecstatic morning. You go back home, you're just like, Krishna consciousness is the best. Right? I've had that experience many times. Yes, Prue?
Thank you for the enthusiastic class. Very sweet. Just in a story I heard recently about protection, how seeing, you know, the energy of the Lord. Prabhupada was coming off a plane, and the devotees were in the airport, and there's a new brahmachari, and he was very excited to see Prabhupada. It was his first time he's ever going to see Prabhupada. And the door opens, where the people are coming off the plane, and this beautiful stewardess came out. And the brahmachari was actually stunned at how beautiful she was and staring at her. And the next moment he turned around and Srila Prabhupada was right beside him looking. And he could see he was looking at the stewardess, and he said, "She is beautiful, isn't she?" And he said, yes, Prabhupada. He said, "Just imagine how beautiful Krishna is."
Mm.
So,
nice.
Prabhupada was seeing, you know, how the energy, and we get caught up in the energy. The other thing I was thinking is, you're talking about how we understand what Krishna wants us to do, and really praying for that. And a Shiksha Guru of mine told me many times that when we pray, we should pray without being attached or averse.
Mm-hmm.
We make sure we're not attached to a certain thing or averse to a certain thing. We just completely, Krishna, whatever you want, make sure there's nothing there.
Yeah.
And then we'll be able to hear, because there's no attachment.
Yeah.
In averse.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Because sometimes it's very difficult to hear that, to understand. And then can you talk more about how to approach maybe, you know, if we don't know what to do, how to approach senior devotees or how to get guidance like that.
Mm-hmm. Well, if we have, I mean, it's important that we already have, senior association in our lives, you know, that we have Shiksha Gurus and in our lives. And then if we're just trying our best to serve and we have, you know, good relationships with devotees who are looking out for us, then the tendency is, I mean, my experience is that those senior devotees will just kind of drop suggestions now and then, you know? Like, hey, you know, what do you think about this? Or, you know, could you see yourself doing this? Or, you know, like that. Or this new course came up, you know, I think, you know, it would be good for you, you know, like that. That's always happens to me. And I usually just take those whenever people suggest things to me, at least most of the time, I'll always like at least consider it, you know, and I'll try to, yeah, and to not be attached, not be averse, just see it as, is this Krishna pushing me? You know, because everything, like I was saying before, that this whole world is moving by the will of Krishna. And if we're open to being used by Krishna as his instrument, Krishna will use us and he'll move us into, you know, exactly the place that we need to be in the association, in the service. He'll give us, you know, he'll equip us to do those things as long as we're not attached to something else, right? But if it's like we're holding on to something so tightly, Krishna's trying to move us somewhere, but we're like, Krishna's like, okay, you know, right, fine, I'm not going to like yank you away from your thing. But if we're just like, I'm yours, like two hands in the air, I'm not holding on to anything. Krishna, I'm yours. Please just use me as your instrument. Whatever you want me to do, I'm ready. You know, then he can just move us. And he'll do that. And he'll use other devotees to do that. So even if we don't ask, my experience is even if you don't go to someone and ask, what should I do? You'll find out. Krishna will just move you. As soon as you surrender and just let go of everything, let go of all your position, your location, your relationships, your, you know, I'm not attached to anything. Like there's nothing. I'm just attached to doing what you want me to do, Krishna.
Right, then we can properly hear.
Yeah. Then Krishna will just, he'll just like, be like, okay, great. He'll just put us in the situation that we need to be in. He's done, I mean, in my life, he's done it time and time again.
It's a nice analogy I heard also, protection, thinking how the cowherd boys, they entered the mouth of Agasura, mm-hmm. and then they were thinking, well, you know, okay, Krishna will protect us. Let's just continue on. And so when we leave our house in the morning, we can think, I'm entering the mouth of Agasura, mm-hmm. I'm going into the Kali Yuga, material energy right now.
Yeah.
And so Krishna, please, you protect me. We're completely dependent on you. I'm going into Agasura right now.
Uh-huh. Yeah, like Rupa Goswami says, Avashya Rakshibe Krishna. Of course Krishna will protect me. Avashya, I mean certainly or obviously. Like obviously Krishna's going to protect me. Of course he's going to protect me. You know, like even, you know, even a materialistic master protects their servant and takes care of them, provides for them, and, you know, sees to their safety. So, like, obviously Krishna's going to protect me if I dedicate my life to him. And he's capable of protecting me. And he wants to protect me. That's actually one of the six principles of surrender, right? Is accepting the protection, the maintenance, accepting the Lord as your maintainer and accepting the Lord as your protector. So Krishna, actually, he wants to maintain us. He wants to protect us. And we have to allow him. You know, our surrender means allowing Krishna to maintain us. But we're thinking, no, I have to maintain myself. I have to do this. I have to do that. I have to earn money. I have to get a place. I have to get insurance. You know, it's like Krishna will take care of that. He's like, he already told you, he's ready to take care of you. You know, I will maintain what you have. I'll carry what you lack. Just dedicate yourself to my service. I'm going to provide for everything. And, you know, like, you know, Konteya Pratijani, hi name bhaktya pranashyati. My devotee will never perish, he says. Arjuna, you say it, because if I say it, they won't believe. Use it. My devotee will not. I will. Of course, I'm going to protect my devotee. Like, duh, that's what I do. So, yeah, we don't have to worry about those things. We just need to keep asking and just to make sure. But Krishna will, no question about it. Okay, we're going over time, so you guys all have things to do. Thank you for your attention, and for being here, and for being devotees, and for being servants. Srila Prabhupada's mission. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Granth Rasa Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Gaura Premanandi.